Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 73 of the Pika Serenity podcast. As always, I am one of your hosts, Emilson, and joining me this week, we have my regular co-host, Anomaly.
Hello.
And special guest, Lincoln from over in Paladin Land.
It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
And today we are going to be talking about gearing and especially the domination gems that are coming in patch 9.1. But we are also going to touch on some of the other changes that are coming in the patch, what kind of things we're going to be doing the first couple weeks to prepare, that kind of thing, because the patch comes on Tuesday for NA. It's yes. Very close. Very, super. Very close. We also kind of have, we're not going to cover everything that happened in the past 2 weeks. We didn't have a show last week because I was out of town. But we are going to hit some of the highlights from the PTR updates from the past couple of weeks, just to kind of catch up. So why don't we jump right into that, Anom?
Sure. So yeah, so a couple of quick, I guess, highlights from the past couple of weeks. There were a number of nerfs coming. One specifically around a lot of the Mythic Plus bosses, but there was a huge one actually in particular to Hakkar. So I don't know if you want to explain the thing here, but it sounds like with Hakkar, essentially once his blood barrier goes up, essentially he doesn't cast anything else than like one ability, right? Where previously I think he still had his like full repertoire available.
So currently on live, the way that Blood Barrier works is that he channels for a certain amount of time, builds up this shield, and then once he's done channeling, he just resumes the fight, right? And that means that if you can't break the shield in time, like before he finishes his channel, basically, then you have less time to do damage to the boss itself. And you can reach a point where, like, you don't actually break the shield before the next shield cast happens. And at that point, you can just never do damage to the boss again. Like, it will eventually just kill you. There is a cheese right now on live that is also being fixed as part of this, where, like, if you break the initial tick of the shield before it finishes charging up, then it just cancels the shield. There's a lot of like screwy stuff with how that works. They cleaned up a lot of it with the patch. It's going to be way more consistently working, but also he's going to just continue channeling until you break the shield, basically is the gist of it, which eliminates that situation where you would run out of time to damage the boss, and like every phase you'd have less and less and less time to damage the boss. Now you always have the same amount of time to damage the boss in between shields. But while he is channeling his shield, there's like basically raid damage going out. Same as there is now, it's just way less noticeable right now because the shield always lasts for, I think, 14 seconds or something is his channel. It's not that long. So.
Gotcha. So it sounds like then you don't get into, it sort of eliminates the scenario where you just don't have the damage to break through the shield before the next one casts. You end up in infinite loop of like essentially dying.
Yeah, right. This basically addresses, this helps a lot with Tyrannical, which, like, just remove Tyrannical, please. And then it also helps with the fact that we are not going to have Pride going into the 9.1 season of Mythic Plus, which, honestly, Pride is one of the only ways to do Hakkar on live. If you don't have Pride for it, you should go do something else and come back when you do have Pride.
Yeah, Hakkar can like make or break a lot of your keys, especially in high level. And if you don't kill Hakkar the first time, you might as well just go reset the key. So, and this will help with that problem a lot, actually.
Yeah, because you normally do, if you're going to do Hakkar first, you do like that weird pull where you pass his entrance, pull like one or two more mobs, and like backtrack into him. So you spawn that Pride right before. So,
yeah.
Yeah, in my weekly 15 no levers, we do that because we're super advanced.
It just makes the boss so much easier when you just kill it in 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And it also makes like organizing cooldowns, like your own DPS cooldowns, easier because it's like, hey, now I can do it when the shield is down. It's much more predictable. all of that. It just makes it a lot, the cadence of the fight is just a lot better.
So
I'm really glad they fixed that stuff.
Awesome. Yes, that seems a very good change. And then, yeah, along with this one, I think they've made multiple changes to other bosses right across the board. I think the other side was hit with some changes to, like, dealer Zyaxna?
Yeah, that's the ethereal boss in there, which I think they nerfed the dot that bounces around, which if you've only done Lokis, you might not be familiar with that mechanic, but there's a dot that bounces around from player to player. Mm-hmm. Scales pretty high. Even just in 15s on Tyrannical, it's a very spooky dot, and it applies a debuff to you that makes you take more damage from it. So you're supposed to, like, bounce it around and keep the debuff slow, except that in practice, usually you just bounce it to one person in the tank and then one person in the tank, or you know, switching people but always going back to the tank, stuff like that. I don't like that mechanic, but they nerfed that. There's a couple other bosses that they did hit as well. So in general, like, I do think that they've hit a lot of the bosses that people were concerned about leaving a prideful world where prideful was carrying us through things like the first boss of Mists.
Yep, exactly. So good changes there. And then I guess keeping with the Mythic Plus theme, there's been a massive nerf to storming, which every melee player is super excited about, right? So I'll just read through what happened, and then we can sort of talk about it a little bit. But basically, storming is the affix that spawns little tornadoes around, basically only in melee, and you have to dodge them. They move fairly quickly. So what they ended up doing was, number one, they do travel much slower now, so they're sort of very easy to dodge at this point. They also always travel in a clockwise motion. I guess it would be this way. So they always travel in a clockwise motion, so you can be a little bit more predictable about their movement. They nerfed the damage. It's now down to only 12% from 15. So a solid nerf there to the amount of damage you take if you do get hit. And then the big one, I think, is that it will now despawn after the first player is hit with it. So a single tornado won't last its entire duration. If someone gets hit by it, it will basically despawn at that point. So basically easier to dodge, less damage done. And, you know, if somebody gets hit, you know, you don't have to continue to dodge that tornado, which maybe make some strategic plays and, like, someone soaking a tornado if it's in a bad spot or not. But in general, this seems like a great change from a melee perspective to, like, not hate storming weeks.
Right? Storming is one of my, like, they took one of my least favorite things about BFA dungeons and they made it a whole Mythic Plus affix. And now I have to deal with it for an entire week. Every few weeks.
Because they were those same tornadoes.
There were three or four different mobs that had this mechanic in BFA, and they all sucked.
Yeah.
Like, do you remember the room before the first boss in King's Rest?
Yes.
The tornadoes were pretty bad, and there was some nonsense about how you had to, like, when they spawned, you would take a step forward, and then you'd be inside the circle of the tornado, and you wouldn't get hit, which, of course, completely broke down as soon as you had to move for anything whatsoever. And they also applied, like, a really nasty dot. It was just, like, a bad time. And they took it and they made it a Mythic Plus affix and somehow made it worse because the tornadoes would spin in, like, both different directions. And so sometimes with a even just a moderately sized pull, like, no MDI pulls here. I'm not that kind of Mythic Plus player. But even with just a moderately sized pull, sometimes you would just have, like, five tornadoes spawn. And, like,
you just can't avoid them, like in Sanguine Depths. Some of these dungeons are really small hallways.
Yeah.
You literally just can't avoid getting hit sometimes. And and this probably makes it a lot easier, a lot more forgiving for, like, lower keys. Like pug keys on storming are gonna be a lot easier now.
Mm-hmm. So it's also gonna be
another good change.
I think the change to make them all circle in the clockwise direction is honestly gonna do huge things for being able to dodge them. Like, having them go in both directions meant that sometimes, you know, you would have two overlapping circles that went opposite directions, and it would just be, like, extreme. Like, it's not impossible to dodge. It's just, like, a lot to dodge on top of playing whatever pull you're in, because they have continued with the BFA thing of, like, making individual pulls. Like, the mobs have more mechanics, right, than they did in Legion still.
Yeah, and this, I think the other thing to point out is in this change, and we didn't mention it kind of in the last segment where they made a bunch of changes, but they buffed some kicks. So, like, if you miss kicks on some abilities, it's actually a little bit more punishing Halls of Atonement, I think they buffed a couple of them. So this actually makes like kept bringing in a melee on that week a little bit better, right? So like you can actually make those kicks. You don't get punished on the other side of it too. So
yeah,
definitely positive.
Yeah, it makes sense. So it seems like they're, you know, at least I think we're on like a delayed feedback loop here with old Blizzard, right? Like get the terrible patch, you give them a bunch of feedback, they still go forward with it, and then like one patch later, they make some minor changes. It makes it not so bad. So
only took 8 months.
Yeah.
So when we get another Mythic Plus Affix refresh, which I expect is probably not going to happen until 10.0, but maybe it happens in 9.2. You know, they could surprise me. I think that they will. I still think they're going to remove Storming and probably Spiteful.
So here's a hot take. I kind of want them to bring teaming back because I feel like
teaming was better than Storming and Spiteful.
Yes, and I feel like teaming kind of for. The point of affixes is that it kind of changes your route week to week. Hey, you think about the dungeon a different way. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the way with Pride worked, you didn't really do that. You literally did the same route almost week to week.
Yeah.
And I don't the think that, that like, they need more affixes that change your routes on week to week. And I thought teaming was
I don't totally agree with that because Beguiling would change your route pretty substantially from week to week, depending on, you know, which mobs were in which locations, and that was honestly really frustrating. I think that was too frequent and too severe. But something like teaming where it happened like once a month,
right,
I think is a lot more reasonable, where like this is the teaming week, your route is going to be a little bit different,
but I don't know if teaming works in Sanguine Depths, right? Like how do you add like an extra trash pack control? Like dungeon layout doesn't really work in their favor to add it back, so
that's something I think they missed on tuning teaming a lot in BFA, and that's one of the reasons that they removed it. Something like basically it turns Siege of Boralus into just press W and like pull literally everything, because that's what you have to do to get the count requirement. And things like King's Rest, of course, being really bad about that.
I think there's also like a I think there was also like a Tal'Dorei where there was like that random one pack that could appear on the right side, and you weren't really sure if it was going to be in your key or not. So like, how do you plan your route around that? So yeah, there were definitely edge cases in BFA, but I think affixes that change your routes are very important. So
That's true.
So those are sort of, I think, the two, I guess, big things that we want to touch on, I think, around Mythic Plus coming in. So some major changes there. I don't know if there's anything else before. I was going to do a quick little rundown of all the new stuff in patch 9.1. Well, not all of it, but what I think is important, and maybe you guys think it's important too. But do a quick little rundown of that, and then we can get into sort of the topic for today, which is sort of gearing, and I think primarily the Sanctum of Domination socket. So it is, of course, a big-ish content patch, right? So the biggest thing that's coming is, of course, we're going to get a new zone, which will include a new rep to grind, so we can get more sockets on gear we already have sockets on. So that'll be fun. So Korthia.
Important thing from that, there's two important things from that rep. One of them is the tool that you use to extract domination sockets so you don't have to regrind them, which we will get to. Domination gems. And the other thing is that it also gives the only non-raid source of domination gem or domination socketed gear, which is going to be like a pretty important like pre-raid thing. Because of how low the drop rates are on gear, you're reasonably likely to get your first like three set of gems by putting on this rep piece.
Yep.
I was just gonna chime in, but we'll get to it later when we break it down.
We'll get into domination gems more. Just since we were talking about the rep, I thought I'd mention those two things.
Yeah, so that's sort of the new rep, new zone, which will include new dailies, of course, and new weeklies. They're bringing back assaults. Or the new, I guess, Shadowlands Assaults, right? So those bi-weekly events, you'll have to do one by, what is it, Friday at 11 p.m. if you're Eastern Standard Time. So Friday night is the reset here in the U.S. And then, of course, typical weekly reset. So bring back that concept from the, what were those called? Like the horrific visions the or assaults horrific, or whatever?
Like, I think they were literally called like...
What were they called? The Mogu Assault and the Mantis Assault.
Yeah, those assault things from the final patch of BFA. So they're back, which is fun.
I think the schedule for those actually match the event in the Beast Warrens. So when that turns over, the Covenant assault will also turn over. So.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, that's good. So that's some new sort of bi-weekly content we have. They are adding new renown levels, of course, as the story progresses. But along with that, they're also adding additional items, or sorry, socket or slots to your Soulbind tree. So now Soulbind trees will have, of course, one new potency conduit slot for sure, and three new powers with sort of a one you have to select, and then one new capstone, essentially. So new Soulbind trees. We'll talk maybe a little bit about that later, but you know, more renowned story stuff to grind and things like that. They're also adding new legendaries. New legendary levels, I'll say. So now there's a rank 5 and 6 to your legendaries. You will have to grind Torghast for a new currency. A little bit of a theme here. There's new currencies for all this. New currency to grind in Torghast, which will just be, you know, you'll find out what your best in slot 1 or 2 are. You'll grind Torghast for a couple weeks and you'll be done. I think WoW has a post up. It's something like 2-ish weeks for the new rank 5 and then an additional like 3-ish weeks, I think, right, for rank 6. I think it ended up being. They actually
just changed the currency cost for the ranks, and now it's looking like it's actually front loaded, so like getting rank 5 is going to take longer than getting rank 6, but it's like the same time total, so it's, I think, unclear. And it also depends on whether we get all of the new levels of Torghast opened up the first week, or if it's like one new level per week.
I've
heard it's going to be one layer per week.
Very similar like the original opening, so yeah. So that'll be fun. So new Torghast levels, but new currency to grind for your legendary ranks. Awesome. You'll have to recraft them anyway because of the sockets, so
we'll get to that.
There is also a new dungeon, actually, which is probably the highlight for me of this, the new mega dungeon, Tazavesh. God, I'm awful at this.
We gotta put more Z's in things.
Yeah, I do. Tazavesh. So it's a new mega dungeon, very similar to Mechagon. It's very long. I think it's what, 8 bosses long. There's of course a hard mode. It will be mythic only loot. I think it drops at 226. Hard mode will drop at 233. So it's a nice little catch up. It is, of course, it's not an upgradable gear, just a heads up. But it'll drop at 226 base item level, which will be nice to sort of catch up things.
I also want to mention, there was the hype around, there was this neck that came from it that had a crazy primary stat proc on it. That got nerfed this week by 85%. So you don't need to worry about having that neck anymore. It's not going to be your bis at like eye level 226 or anything like that. It's still good. It's still good for its eye level. It's just not better than stuff that's 20 or 30 eye levels higher.
Yeah. When I mapped it out for Prod Paladin, I think it was like worth like 10 item levels. So like if you get like a neck out of Heroic, it's going to be better than like Heroic Raid. It'll be better than this neck.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's there. There's, of course, nice segue. There is the new raid, Sanctum Domination, which we'll probably not do too much to talk about today. But of course, it's a content patch, always a new raid. Yep. You get to kill Sylvanas at the end, hopefully, unless she lives by some dumb reason.
There are some encrypted cinematics for the end of the raid, and we will find out next week or two weeks ago.
I'd be very surprised if she doesn't die, because like they have that book coming out, and if you read the description for the book, it reads like it's an obituary. So
I hope to God they kill her.
I'd be very surprised if she doesn't die.
I'm hoping she doesn't come back. I'm sick and tired of them redeeming every character in WoW. All right. Next up, we have the new Mythic Plus rating system, which we talked a little bit about it, about Mythic Plus. But in general, they're adding basically Raider.io to now the base UI. You'll get sort of a score, on how well you do the dungeon. And that score is going to be tied to your Valor upgrade. So in order to get the maximum Valor upgrade of your gear, you'll need to get the maximum score, which I think is just basically doing 15s on both Tyrannical and Fortified for each dungeon. I don't know if they've changed the scoring to that. I know that they've been hemming and hawing.
I think Mithy has mathed it out, and I think it's like 17s on both at the current at the current score game. So I think that's the number they're at, unless they've changed it since. So yeah.
No, I mean, I haven't looked at it really since they originally came out, since they've been making changes literally every day for the past week. So
yeah, it's quite a bit different in terms of like scaling from Radar.io score, where like Radar.io, like every key level is like an exponential increase in the number of points you get for completing it in time.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that the WoW Mythic Plus score is more like linear. I don't know if it's literally linear, but it's a lot closer to that than the exponential curve that Radar.io has used. So it's going to change things. Like, we're not going to see things like a typical player have like 1500 IO and a top player having like 5k IO or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, apparently Hina's saying WoW had posted something about it this morning. I haven't checked.
I haven't seen that either.
So,
but I wouldn't be surprised if people still use Radar.io. Like, so,
oh, yeah.
The Blizzard system has a lot of restrictions. It doesn't show cross spec scores. It doesn't show alts. It doesn't show a number of these things that only Radar.io is going to be able to pull. Maybe Blizzard will show that stuff in future versions. But for this one,
I kind of doubt it.
Yeah, you're going to still need Radar.io if you want to get keys on your alts. So,
yeah. This is something as well where there's still a lot, even aside from score, there's a lot of other features that, you know, Radar.io is used for.
Yeah, you know, raid progress, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, like if you plug in a raid, like Radar.io shows like raid progress, it kind of progresses this guy. So.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, it's a little bit of everything. So yeah, so that's the new Mythic Plus, I guess, rating system going to be. Yeah, it sounds like WoW has got a post up on how the actual scoring works, but then also your highest score is going to dictate how high you can upgrade your gear with Valor. So keep that in mind. You're going to want to grind that out if you want those upgrades. And then the only other final thing that I had, and you guys can add additional, we are unlocking flying. So flying will be a part of, there's been so many posts about this. I think it's just tied to like a story quest to actually unlock flying.
Yeah.
So like you just have to complete the new, I guess, story up to a certain point and you'll have flying unlocked. It is only for the four zones. So like Revendreth, Mondraxis, Bastion, and whatever, Nightfade, Ardenweald. So you can't fly in the Maw. You can't fly in the new Corthia zone. God. Corthia zone. And you can't fly in Orbos, but at least in the four Covenant zones, you'll be able to fly.
Yeah, flying this expansion has the least value it's ever had because you can't fly between zones and
you can't fly
between zones, and there's no need to do like AP world quest sweeps and things like that. They really inflate the value of flying for a raider. But it is going to be nice to have no flying in the Maw though, right? Yeah, only regular ground mounts.
Only regular mounts, and then as part of the quest line, you'll be able to unlock your just whatever mount you want. To use in the Maw. You don't have to use the Corridor Creeper or whatever else.
Yep, so. Which is great, because as soon as I heard that, I stopped trying to get it.
I'm glad I spent a week grinding endless corridors to get that.
Yeah.
So. Okay, so Hina has a message about the Mythic Plus rating. So it's apparently like 37 rating for completing a keystone. Every keystone level adds an extra 7-ish, and then every affix, so like crossing the like 3, 7, and 10 thresholds, like adds another 7 to it. And then
complicated.
You get a time bonus, but it is ultimately like a linear scale. Which does mean that like there's gonna be not that much difference between doing. I think this is actually one of the reasons that we're gonna see people continue using Radar.io score for actually comparing people. And it's just gonna be, I think the score system is better for acquiring upgrades, Valor upgrades. It's a lot more flexible than having to do every key in time on 15. Like you can do your 18s on the whatever keys that you need gear from and like 12s on other keys that you don't need gear from and get your score requirement that way.
Yep. Yeah, I think the flexibility is a lot better, but the Radar.io in terms of granularity is a lot better.
So. Yes, I agree.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah. And it looks like, just real quick, I actually just pulled up this article. One thing just to point out, which might not be true, but it looks like your rating is not account-wide. So
that is correct. Yeah, it's only tied to the individual character. So if you get 2,000 rating on, say, your main monk, and then you want to upgrade, say, your alt, you're going to need to get the rating on the alt. So
that is a downside in Season 1, or, you know, since 9.0.5. The achievement is account-wide, so you were able to use it to upgrade alt gear, which was
pretty nice. Maybe the Keystone Master achievement is account-wide, so once you earn that.
But it's not tied to the achievement anymore, right? It's tied to
your personal rating. The achievement is tied to the rating, so once you get the rating, you earn the achievement.
Right.
So maybe that should count for alts. Hopefully,
I think it should.
Yeah. I think it should. If you have the achievement or the rating, then it should allow you to upgrade. So
yeah. But we will see how that actually pans out. I do think that the new system is flexible enough that it's not going to be as frustrating. Like I didn't have Keystone Master yet because I didn't need anything from it. But I had, you know, everything timed on 15 except for like two dungeons. And those two dungeons I had timed on like other characters.
Right.
And had to just go and like wrap it up on my monk in order to get the achievement.
Yeah, that is the one, I think. Yeah, I mean, I guess it's fair that like they want to track progress all on one character, right? But yeah, it sucks that with the ease that you can play alts this expansion, that they don't make some of these systems a little bit easier to like go between. So, but yeah, I think those were the major at least patch things. I know we sort of just glossed over it at a high level, but I mean, to be fair, like looking at it holistically, it's not a ton of content, right? It's a new zone, which we expect. It's a new raid, which we expect, right? But
yeah,
beyond that, I mean, at least they've held true to, I think, the statement that Ian said, is they're not trying to build a bunch of new systems or change a bunch of systems every patch. So we only really get, I think, like one big one.
Yeah. So before we get into the domination sockets, I do want to real quick mention one more thing about the patch, and that is specifically with regards to PvE gearing. So in patch 9.0, like PvP gear was extremely good for PvE. Like you got to pick your slots. Stats were really good for certain classes like Brewmaster, and the rate at which you got them was actually like very competitive with other sources of gear. With the change they made to PvP gear, where like now they're lower eye level but get an eye level bump in PvP, I wanted to like kind of mention what the relevant eye level breakpoint is for like where you need to maybe be concerned about PvP gear. And basically, like Mythic Plus gives 236 gear from doing a plus 15. You do need to do a plus 15 in order to get the max eye level from your weekly vault, which is 252, which is the same as Mythic gear from the raid. And then the raid drops 226, 239, and 252 at normal, heroic, and mythic, respectively. With the last two bosses having the loot bumped by, I think, 7 eye levels again, just like in Castle Nathria. PvP, the base eye level that you actually get when you're in a raid or a dungeon instance, is lower, which basically means that in order to get heroic equivalent loot from PvP, you need to reach 1800 in PvP, as opposed to like 1600 in 9.0. So that's a reasonably more difficult task. But if you can hit 1800, it's still definitely worth it just for the extra source of loot. So if you have a group that you can do RBGs with, I think that's probably the easiest way for most PvE players to do it, is to do RBGs. Then that is, I'm planning to do it for me to get that extra bit of 240.
It's a really easy source of weapons, because you could literally just buy the weapon off the vendor. So like weapons are generally what you're going to want to target from PvP. So
yep,
weapons and maybe like one of the trinkets. So
yeah, the trinkets. I know that they, for healers, the trinkets are really solid. Still,
the trinkets are really bad for Brewmaster, but the PvP gear has our best stat combination on it. So it's actually like for its eye level, best in slot. The catch being that you really cannot get mythic equivalent eye level gear from PvP unless you're like 2400.
Yeah, but I mean, I think the PvP gear not as important, but yeah, I think that 1800-ish level probably makes sense, at least if you can hit that the first week, right? That just sort of bumps you up.
I don't even think it necessarily needs to be the first week, because what you can do is like, if it takes you 3 weeks to hit 1800, then on that third week, you can just take whatever slots you haven't gotten loot in yet and just buy pieces for it. And if you have gotten lucky and you've gotten upgrades in every slot, like, congratulations, you won the lottery. For the rest of us, there's probably going to be one or two pieces that you haven't gotten an upgrade in yet that you can bump to 240 by hitting 1800.
Yeah.
And I'm just really, just generally on gearing, I'm just really happy that the raid loot is going to be buffed at the start. Mythic Plus is going to be a lot better at the start. So I actually personally think
Valor from the get-go is going
to
be amazing.
Yeah. And like the change that they made to the end chest at a Mythic Plus dungeon, where even if you don't time the key, it still drops the second item, even at lower item level.
Yeah.
I think those changes are generally going to be really good at the beginning. I think Mythic Plus is going to be a really good way to gear early on. So
that's what I've been hearing from a lot of people. Like, I think a lot of people are saying like Mythic Plus is the go-to for PvE gearing. The eye level is, what did I say, 239 for 236 for completing a plus 15. Yep. You get two pieces. That's almost, you know, like 1800 gear for PvP. So if you're not really committed to hitting 1800 reasonably quickly, you're probably better off just doing keys.
Yeah, and just timing 15s. If you
just time 15s.
Yeah, you'll just be decked in no time.
Yeah.
And then even the first week, just getting 229 gear out of 10s is going to be pretty significant.
Yep.
Yeah. Got a couple of slots here. But cool, yeah, no, it'll be gearing. It'll be fun to not have to PvP, I will tell you, because it's like that was the worst part of 9.0, right? For at least
I actually kind of enjoyed playing Windwalker in RBGs, so I'm still planning to do it partially for that reason. Like, I did enjoy doing that once I actually got into some good groups that weren't just total YOLO, because those groups, the YOLO no communication groups suck. Sometimes they win games, but they suck to play in. If you get a good group with good people calling targets and stuff like that, it can be a lot of fun. But speaking of raid gear, there is one extra element of raid gear this coming patch that is going to make it extra desirable for everybody that is primarily engaged in the raiding game. And even to a degree, extra desirable for people who are not.
Yes.
And that is this new domination socket system that they have added in patch 9.1. So the way this works, I meant to pull up the WoWhead post for this, but the way this works, I got it actually. So the way this works is that there are going to be five pieces of gear for your armor type that have a special kind of socket in them called the domination socket. So there are nine different gems that you can go in them, which we'll talk about in a minute. And the gems have three different colors. You can have a red one, a green one, and a blue one. And you get a set bonus if you equip three of the same type. You can only have one of those sets equipped at a time because you need three of them, and there's five. But the set bonus is generally like what you're after. Like, that's why you equip these gems, because individually they are not that strong. The catch being that the set bonus only works while you are in the raid, in Torghast, the Maw, or the new Mega Dungeon. Meaning it does not work in Mythic Plus, it does not work in PvP. So the intent there is like that raid gear should be desirable over other types of gear for raiders, which is why the set bonus only works really in raid. But that's not actually entirely how it works, because other forms of content do get these other gems that are kind of nice. So I'm going to pull up the list of gems now. These are all unique equipped, meaning you can't, for example, equip five of your best simming gem, which is something I definitely tried to do the first time I was simming these for Brewmaster. But that does mean, for example, if you want to get the red or blood set, you have to equip Shard of Beck, Shard of Jess, and Shard of Rev, and one Frost Gem and one Unholy Gem. But the gem bonuses individually, as I said, are fairly weak. What you get out of them, for the most part, is these set bonuses, which up until basically this week, the Unholy set bonus, which gives you a large primary stat buff and a reasonable proc of damage, was the best one by a huge margin, and it got dumpstered this past week, and now everybody is like scrambling to figure out what one they actually want to use. For Brewmaster, spoilers, you want to use the blood one.
Oh, I can add a little fact here. the current proc rate for the Chaos Bane is not what it'll be when it'll go live. I've been told that it is a bug and that the intended cycle time, I guess, how long it takes you to build the stacks, get the proc, is going to be 2 minutes. So they want to kind of get it in line with the trinket. Right now it's like 5+ minutes, so they're going to get that down to 2 minutes.
So in Sims right now, from the Sims I was doing yesterday, the cycle time is about 2 minutes for Sims. So I don't expect that number to change. For Brewmaster, for everyone, the Blood one, Blood Link, does damage and leech. And if it overheals you, it heals a nearby ally. It's just a flat damage proc, which like Brewmaster has been all over for the past half decade. Nothing new here. The value of the Chaos Bane Unholy proc would need to go up by a lot over what it's currently simming at in order to overtake the blood set. I don't know of anybody that actually wants to run the Frost set.
I don't even think it was working on the PTR until this week. Like it literally did nothing in logs when I looked at it.
Beautiful. So that one is whenever you critically strike, then the effect accumulates 6% of that effect up to a cap that's fairly low. And then every 20 seconds, the damage that's accumulated gets dealt to surrounding targets. So it looks kind of neat. In practice, it's not tuned to the point that it's actually going to be useful.
Nope. It's generally going to be third if you're going to rank them for your specific class. So I was just going to say, just jump in on one point you mentioned earlier. I think if you're looking to set and forget these gems, like i.e. you just are never going to want to swap them out, you don't get the item off the vendor, I think Unholy is probably going to be your best bet, because I think in an AoE, it's going to pull ahead. So in those situations, it'll be a little bit better. Because Blood, if you remember, Blood Link is only in single target. It only works on if you're actually actively attacking.
Yeah.
So if the second you add a second target, Blood Link loses a little bit of value.
The catch is that this really only works in the raid. So you have to look at how often are you hitting multiple targets where you're actually getting, like, you want the extra value from the Unholy Gem on those secondary targets. And for most of the fights in Sanctum of Domination, the answer is never. There are a few fights where you do have adds that need to die that are important, and that you don't have like a priority target that you're single target focusing down. Yep. And on those, Unholy will probably pull ahead for Brewmaster as well, just because primary stat works on AoE, blood works on single target. But for the most part, I would actually recommend for Brewmaster that you just, if you want to set and forget, put it on blood and just forget about it, because it is going to be behind on AoE, but for the most, like for probably 8 out of 10 bosses, blood is going to be better. And then for the last two, blood is going to be better at parts and Unholy better at other parts.
So the only thing I'll say is that I think the tuning on phase 2 Sylvanas could be a big factor. If that is tuned very hard and you need the AoE damage, then that's where Unholy could pull ahead, because the end boss will be pretty significant in how you gear your character and prepare your character. So
But we do know as well, so these gems, all these are drops in raid, right? You get the gem itself from the raid.
I actually think there is a quest in Korthia in the campaign or very early on where you get a free gem, where I think they give you like Shard of Beck for free at the lowest rank.
Yeah.
And that is the gem you would potentially use, and the one that comes from the reputation vendor. So like outdoor, like folks that don't raid will at least get the one gem, and they can attach it to the one item.
There's also, these gems are all upgradable. There's a currency for doing it. There's dailies that give you some of the currency in Korthia, as well as we know that there will be currency drops from the raid bosses, but they weren't actually dropping it on PTR, so we don't know the numbers. Most people are expecting it to function like the essence upgrades from Nyalotha and Eternal Palace, where it's like a pittance for normal and LFR, a decent amount for heroic, and then quite a bit for mythic. So you'll be able to probably upgrade these relatively quickly. But we don't actually know yet. But the set bonus does not scale with the rank of the gems. It's just the gem itself that that gets a bonus from that. So odds are good. There's going to be like one gem you really care about upgrading, and then a couple more that are kind of good to upgrade, and then the rest you're just not going to care about. So you're not going to need to max out all 9 gems.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think the other thing too with this...
I was just going to say, unless you're super tryhard.
Yes. I think the only thing, before we get into maybe thoughts on the system, is that there is a restriction on this for the set bonus to actually trigger. So depending on the set bonus, you actually need to have a specific piece of gear equipped with a gem in it. Yes. So I believe it's for like the unholy set to be active. Even if you have 3 unholy gems, if you do not have a helm equipped with the socket, the unholy set bonus will not be active. Similarly, frost is on shoulders. You have to have shoulders equipped, and then blood is chest. So a weird requirement there to have the set bonus is active, but just to keep that in mind as you sort of collect those gems.
I think it's kind of dumb. Like, I understand kind of that they want to make sure people are putting on the gear that has the set bonuses and not just putting it on, like, you know, wrist and belt and what other slot, and then equipping non-socketed pieces in those last 2 slots. But the way the gems actually work, there's no incentive to do that, especially with the socket gear being such high eye level relative to most other sources of gear, because it comes from the raid. And in fact, for leather wearers, you can, I think, get 2 out of 3 of those pieces from the last 2 bosses, even higher eye level.
Yeah, that's another inconsistency, is that, like, so while helms, shoulders, and chests from the raid will all have sockets on them, depending on your armor class, your other 2 pieces of gear that have sockets on them will differ.
Yeah.
And like you mentioned, some of those pieces could drop from the last 2, dropping at 233, while another class might not have that, or armor class might not have that available to them. So, you know, for leather, you're going to, along with helm, shoulders, and chest, you're going to get your sockets on gloves and boots. You know, plate is bracer and gloves, mail is belt and boots, and then cloth is bracers and belt. So it's sort of spread across the other different armor slots. But yeah, very weird, the requirement. I'm wondering if it has to do with the way the set bonuses are just crafted from a technical perspective, where like they needed to tie it to like quote unquote an old set bonus. So you need to have that piece of gear equipped.
Yeah.
To like technically trigger the bonus. I don't know. But yeah, it's a very weird requirement. It's also weird that it's different per set, right? Like it would be nice if you just had to have helm equipped, and then all 3 would work no matter what. So
it does, I think, honestly, the most likely outcome of this, like, you must have this item equipped to get your set turned on, is that you're gonna end up with like 3 blood gems and not able to turn on the blood set because you haven't gotten the piece to drop yet.
Right. And I think that's one of the biggest problems, is that if you get forced, you could get forced into the frost set with the way the rules of this work, is that you just don't get the drop. And I feel like that's one of the flaws of this.
Yeah.
And from what I've been told, I believe they did that to kind of harken back to the set bonus system of like the tier sets, of having required pieces, like the number of required pieces you needed on.
Right. Those required a number of pieces, though. So we ended up in situations like you could put on your, I don't remember, bracers and gloves or whatever they were from an old set because they were low budget pieces, and then still benefit from the 2-piece bonus on them.
Yeah, they've made a lot of behind the scenes, a lot of comparisons to tier sets that just don't work. Because if you compare like the situation to like Legion tier sets, those were 6 items, but you only needed to equip 4 of them, right? In this situation, you're probably going to want to equip 5 of 5.
Yeah.
So that's a massive difference in terms of like how many slots are geared, like locked on the paper doll and all of that. And I think it's just going to cause massive amounts of disruption. And I'm like, for me, like, I just don't think this system adds any value to the game. That's just my opinion.
I think somebody gave a, to sort of now, I guess, open up to like how we think about it, right? Like, I think somebody gave a really good, there's a really good picture I saw of like a character sheet, right? And it's like X's on the gear slots you cannot change, you have to equip, right? Yeah. And like these 5 gem slots are already all on the board, right? Whatever legendary you use, that slot's going to be taken out, right? So it's almost like this becomes almost more restrictive because, like, the gems are only just a bonus on gear you were probably going to want to equip anyway, right? There's no downside of equipping a piece of gear, like gloves with a gem slot versus gloves without a gem slot, because they're the same stats. The gem slot just always will add something to it, right?
The only thing is, like, if you get, say, well, no, from the raid, like, if you get mythic leather gloves, they're always going to have a domination socket. There's literally...
Oh, that's true.
The only way you could end up with not a domination socket on that slot is if you take one from your mythic plus vault, which, as a note, you basically want to never take loot from your vault that has a domination socket for your armor type from the raid. So, like, if you could get, if you have the options of, like, a helm or a cloak from the vault, you should just take the cloak, even if it's a smaller upgrade now, because you will eventually get that helm that has a socket from the raid, and you're never going to put that other helm on over it, unless you're only doing, like, heroic raiding and you have got a 252 helm from your vault. So if you're mythic raiding, you should just never take things from Mythic Plus that compete with a domination socket, basically.
Right, yeah.
And especially, I think you're three armor, primary armor slots, so, like, you never want to take helm, shoulder, or chest, yep. Because, like, you need those slots to be domination or activate that bonus. So.
The first week of raid, when people are getting their first 252s from the vault from the previous week, I guarantee you there is going to be a post on Reddit of someone that has a full, like, three Mythic Plus options, and their choices are going to be helm, shoulders, chest.
That's right. It's gonna happen.
Yeah, it's just, there's no point in picking it up. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's, I think that's the scare, right? Or the not the scare, but the bad part of the system, right? Is that they take maybe the good ideas of, hey, we're gonna introduce set bonus, right? Which I think people want, right? Like, that was a fun system, but they've done it in, like, one of the most restrictive ways, right? Like, there's no chance of like equipping one item over another item, right? Because, like, you only need, to your point, I think, Lincoln, like, you only needed four pieces before, but you had six options, so it was nice. Like, in this case,
that worked really well with legendaries, right? Because
yeah,
in that system, you have to remember that legendaries were fixed per slot, so you could easily, in this, if they had that now, like, you'd just be totally screwed, because, like, you just never get the legendary in the other slot.
Which, on that note, we are going to have to, so Brewmasters, both of our legendaries from this tier, Stormtail's Last Keg and Charred Passions, had both of their slots. Actually, no, Charred Passions had a back slot as well. So, well, Stormtail's Last Keg, and most people crafted the other one on the boots. You are going to have to recraft that, so that it doesn't compete with the domination socket.
I mean, I think it's across the board, like, almost every armor class.
Almost everybody, like, has to recraft the this tier.
Yeah, I think WoWhead put out a list this week of every, like, all the guide writer recommendations on the recrafting. So,
yeah.
And I think it's easily two or three per spec. So,
I mean, I know that, at least for, particularly for Mistweaver, our recommendations, you all had to swap, whether, no matter which legendary you crafted, you were going to have to recraft it, just based on, like, you picked the highest stat budget slot, right? And for all of our legendaries, that was a domination slot, so it's
I mean, they put domination slots on three of the highest stat budget slots, which is helm, shoulders, chest. That's why they put Azerite pieces there last expansion as well. They were the high budget pieces.
Yeah So it's definitely, like, that's frustrating, right? Because they haven't really given us a way to recraft them easily, so it's literally just, like, start back at one. And...
yeah, at the same time, I actually don't think it's that big of a deal, because of the Soul Ash catch-up, where in order to... you're not going to start out with having domination sockets in every slot. So you're not going to be able to start out with your set bonus on. And not having the set bonus, the domination sockets are not worth that much. So you can hang on to your current legendary for a little bit and not worry about it. And then by the time you actually have the soul cinders that you need to build a rank 5 legendary, you will have enough soul ash to do that as well. So, and that's even with, like, basically zero soul ash going into the patch. So once you get, you can just build a rank 5 in the new slot when you have the soul cinders for it. And maybe you have to not wear a domination socket for, like, a week. But if you're, like, playing at the level where you need to be able to wear that domination socket, you're also playing at the level where you already have your soul ash pooled to be able to build your rank 4 immediately on the patch launch.
Or you've already done it. Like, I've already recrafted one legendary. And they have made a lot of changes. Like, they've changed the Torghast experience, double the amount of Soul Ash. Going to 5 and 6 require a different currency.
Yeah. So they require 0 Soul Ash. So if you have 0 Soul Ash right now and you go into the patch and all you need is the Soul Cinders and the new base items, which fuck small servers. If you need, leather pieces are expensive, especially because they just completely screwed up the numbers on those. They're really, really expensive. So it's going to be pretty annoying to have to buy 2 more base items to upgrade my legendary to rank 6. But at the very least, now it's optimal for me to use a cloak for Charred Passions, which is not leather and therefore incredibly cheap. It's
very, very easy to get because there's a zillion of them. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only problem that I have while recrafting them is easy. It's the fact that like I just spent a week and a half farming Stygia in the mall for sockets because I was worried about them not being able to socket the new piece I have to recraft, right? And so I know they've changed that, right? Blizzard put up, Blizzard made that change, right? So now that it'll craft with a socket, you know, after 9.1, which is fine, but it's like, but it's just like there's why did that come so late? Like that's the annoying part to me. It's like the actual aspect of like recrafting it. I understand it's like less time invested and it's not a big deal because I'm gonna be doing this content anyway. It's just like being the type of person that wants to be prepared, it just sucks that I didn't have to do that. I could have been lazy.
I got really lucky actually that I was out of town for the past week and that meant that I couldn't really do any prep. And that means that by the time I got back, they had already said, oh yeah, all that prep is worthless, so I just didn't do it.
So when I told a designer at Blizzard this is what people were going to be doing, farming Stygia to pre-socket legendaries before the patch, and the reason they had to do this is because they removed the item from Venari. So you can no longer use Stygia to buy the socket item from Venari starting on Tuesday. It's just going to be gone. He's like, yeah, I don't even know why they removed the item. And then I think that's why they made this change, is to potentially to stop players from pre doing that. So
it's just weird that they did it like the week before, because like you would have had to start farming it like a couple weeks ago to make sure you had, if you had to craft 2 legendaries, like you needed enough Stygia to get those 2, right? So it wasn't a week long activity. It was like multiple weeks to get the Stygia you needed. So it's just more frustrating than anything, I think.
Twitch chat wants me to clarify that if you are going to make a rank 5 or rank 6 legendary, you do need Soul Ash for it. If you are not starting from a rank 4 of that legendary.
Yeah, if you don't have the legendary additional one. Yeah, if you don't have so for example, if you want a rank 5 of your Covenant legendary that's coming out in the patch, you'll need the 5,000 whatever Soul Ash to craft that for the first version.
By the time you get the Soul Cinders to make the rank 5, you will have the Soul Ash that's required anyway, so it's not a huge deal. Like, you're not going to have to basically regrind all of the, you know, first 4 ranks in terms of time, and then also have to do the 2 ranks of Soul Cinders stuff on top of it. It's going to be basically you get the Soul Cinders and you're good to go. Which also, this actually means it's going to be pretty easy to get a rank 4 legendary for an off-spec, because you're going to end up with just a glut of Soul Ash that you don't need.
The collecting value, I know a lot of people that have complained, I don't get enough Soul Ash to collect all these legendaries before the end of the expansion. Now they'll be able to collect all of them, so
which is whatever. It's so frustrating. Like, recrafting something, it's just,
oh yeah, I am not looking forward to having to dump another like 100 to 200k into upgrading my leather legendary to rank 6.
So here's one tip. So with valor you can buy materials for the crafting to help offset the cost. So
that,
if
would
you
require actually, me to have valor pulled up,
like, so for example, I have like 10,000 valor across multiple characters, just go buy the material that you need, leather or whatever else. So that'll help.
Highly recommend, check your server economy. Leather is probably the most valuable.
Yeah, for sure,
makes sense. Yeah, so I mean, I guess that's like the new Sanctum system, right? It's sort of gems. You build, or you need at least 3 of them for like a set bonus. So it's kind of like the old set bonus system, but the slots are locked. And like, to be fair, The other thing I don't think we really touched on is like the upgrade path, right? Is like this system's very, very touchy when it comes to like tuning, particularly, yeah. Right? Like, so as gems raise and lower in power, like you are dumping a limited like currency, right? A currency you can't just grind, right? It's a limited currency into upgrading gems. And to be fair, if you upgrade quote unquote the wrong gem, you can feel behind. You're probably not behind. It's probably not going to be a massive tuning shift, but the idea is like, you're gonna maybe get a gem that you're like really excited about, but you can't really equip because you already dumped a bunch of, what is it called? Right. The new upgrade currency.
It's called Stygian Embers. And I don't even think that's the biggest concern with upgrading. I think it's the actual experience in the game of doing it. So the way it actually works is that you get the item off the vendor. I think it requires Honored now. You need 2,500 Stygia to buy it. So make sure you have that going into the patch. And then in order to upgrade, you have to use the item on like the consume, it's not a consumable, but the vendor item on the item, unsocket the gem. On the vendor, you have to find the item you want to upgrade, buy it, then you can resocket it.
Oh man.
So that's how the actual experience actually works. They have
that's just like, so much.
Yeah, it's tedious. It's tedious is the word I would use. Like they have the upgrade vendor in Orbos. They just chose not to use it. Maybe they couldn't use it technically, but like they just the process of upgrading these gems is just not good.
That was the other thing I think I read is that like if you sort of bank a bunch of Stygian Embers, you still have to do that. You can't go from like rank 1 to rank 5 with like one transaction. You basically have to like step your way up. You have to like buy the rank 2 gem, buy the rank 3 gem. Yeah, that's just it's awful. Like that sort of UX flow or whatever you want to call it, right? Like just seeing that. To be fair, that's actually much worse than upgrading the wrong gem. Like it would actually sound going to be very hard to upgrade the wrong gem because to actually upgrade it is difficult to do, right? That actually sounds terrible.
This is this kind of situation where I actually would have preferred if they just didn't let you upgrade gems at all, and like you got the rep and you just bought the gems, and the gems were like really cheap, and you just like kind of like back in MOP when we had the Shaw Touch gems or whatever they were.
Yeah,
you just go buy another one.
Yeah, that would have been a better system.
If I remember right. I might be thinking of Legendary Cloak actually.
No, it was part of the same quest line, but you bought the gems, you got the weapons off the end bosses of Heart of Fear and Terrace, and then you just bought the gem off the vendor.
Yeah. If you needed a new gem, you just went and bought a new gem.
You just went and bought the gem. It was literally just gold.
On that note, the gems themselves are not that powerful. I think the best gem individually is like 1-2% DPS for Brewmaster. And so that means like upgrading it from rank 1 to rank 5, you're moving it from 1-2 to like most likely around 2-3% DPS, which is like, okay, that's like, I'm not going to say no to it, but this is a lot of ceremony for a 2% passive DPS increase.
Yeah, so one thing I'm hoping they've figured out on all of this is that the higher difficulty of the raid should just pre-drop the gem. So like Mythic will just drop the gem at rank 4 or drop the gem at rank 3. So that's one thing I'm hoping they do. I hope they do not drop rank 1 gems in Mythic or on Heroic. Just drop the gem at rank 2 or 3. Make it a lot simpler. So hopefully they figure that out.
Yeah. That way, that actually would be a very nice change because then it's like, then you basically need, you still need some currency to get to the next rank, but it's not as intense, right?
And it's a little bit more rewarding. You kill a boss on a higher difficulty, you get a better gem out of it. It's just a lot more logical sense.
You remove that sort of,
I was just gonna say, but logic, as we know, is not in Blizzard's vocabulary.
Yeah. True. Yeah. I mean, you remove that situation where you are like in BFA, early BFA, you had like Azurite armor and you get the new, whatever the new Azurite armor was, but your neck wasn't high enough yet. So it's like, well, great. I get sweet drop, but it's like, can't use it. Similarly, like maybe you get a rank 1 gem you're really excited about, but you're like, well, this other gem at rank 4, I guess I have to wait, you know, or I have to like, I should equip it, but it can be so much more powerful because I have all the Stygian Embers, right, to upgrade it at this point.
I think it's worse for the player experience to say you get the gem, you've killed the hard boss in the raid, you get the gem, and then you want to use it, but then you have to go to the vendor outside of the raid. It's like reforging back in like MOP.
It's worse.
Yeah, it's worse. So yeah, if they need to pre-drop the gems at higher ranks. So
yeah, that would be nice for sure.
I mean, I think my summary of this system from like a, I'm not looking forward to the system. I'm actually like kind of dreading this system. I would rather just not had anything than had this probably. Because the thing they're trying to do is to make raid gear desirable. Right. But I don't think they really needed to do that by making raid gear have this extra like bullshit system layered on top.
Sorry, once you finish, I can add a little bit of background detail on how the system actually came to date. Okay. So
basically once they buffed raid drops in particular, raid gear's eye level is enough over what you get from Mythic Plus that I think it's compelling on its own. Like, you cannot from Mythic Plus get 252 pieces per week. You get one. And maybe it's not even the one you need, but you get one. Whereas if you're raiding Mythic, there's a relatively decent chance, like, by the time you're halfway through the instance, you're getting like 1.5 to 2 pieces of 252 loot per week. And so I think that just on that level, once they buffed raid drops, that raid loot is already more compelling. And that adding this whole extra system of, I'm going to steal a quote from chat right now, of Walmart tier sets is not fun or necessary.
Yeah, so from what I've been told, one of the reasons they added this into the game at all is that they looked at their analytics, and in the analytics, like the business analytics for the game, the mainstream raider, so they consider the mainstream raider as the person who clears heroic mm-hmm. and does some mythic. Like none of us, the three of us are not in that group. We're all CE cutting edge, you know, 10 out of 10 M raiders this year. So like you're thinking about like the person like Friends and Family Guild or even slightly above that, they maybe only cleared like up to council but couldn't kill council in the raid on Mythic, right? And they looked at the analytics of the gear that they were using, and most of the gear that they had equipped was from Mythic Plus.
So, I mean, that makes sense.
That they believed that like they were just getting to bosses in like Mythic or like later Heroic, and they just weren't using the gear, and they figured that they needed to add more spice to the loot drops to get them to use gear potentially out of the raid. So that's literally why the system exists.
I can understand that, because definitely the argument that I had around eye level breaks down if you're only looking at heroic loot. If you're looking at heroic loot, it's only 3 item levels higher than the base drops from a plus 15. So if you're grinding out plus 15s, you're going to be 3 eye levels lower than full heroic, basically.
Yep.
Without even considering the vault. And that means that, especially with things like Pox Storm and some of the best trinkets coming from Mythic Plus, you're going to end up with a bunch of your gear just being from Mythic Plus and then 252 pieces from the vault without even touching Heroic.
Yep. And then you get into Mythic and then you're killing like Zymox and like whatever. And then you just, nobody needs any of the gear because you are already infected.
Some of that's because Zymox only drops a ring. There's other stuff on his loot table, but
Zymox is an example, but like you kill any mythic boss.
I know what you mean.
So you just don't need the gear on it because you've already have like the gear in that slot or whatever. So
Yeah. I mean, I guess it sounds like, I mean, on paper that sounds good. It just seems like, again, like from an implementation perspective, it just falls short, right? Like you mentioned, like the experience of like having someone like unsocket a gem just to upgrade it and then resocket it back in that piece, or even like the idea of like I have to like make sure I have this item on me so I can, if I get a new drop, like if I have the normal mode gloves, right, and I get the heroic mode gloves, I have to make sure I have this item on me so I can take my gem out of my normal gloves, put it in my like heroic gloves or whatever it ends up being. It seems rough, and it seems like, I mean, to be honest, like if they want to make raid gear good, just get like, I guess the idea is like they keep running up against this sort of like design philosophy where it's like, we want you to be able to do what you want and get the best gear from whatever you want, whether that's PvP, Mythic Plus, or raids, right? But what I think they're finding is that like, and maybe they just need to hear this, is that like from a PvE perspective, like I would feel like most people gravitate towards raiding anyway and understand that that should be probably the place where the best gear comes from, right?
Right.
Regardless of like anything else, like Mythic Plus can be Mythic Plus and maybe it's just a couple item level below, right? But keep raiding as sort of like your primary. If you want to do the hardest content, you want to sort of push that, get the gear, get sort of like the prestige from that, like keep it raiding. And then if they did that, if they had the actual eye level difference in just the way the gear drops, then, you know, a system like this potentially isn't needed. I mean, I think bringing back tier sets is cool.
They kind of have that though, right? Because the end drops from Mythic Plus are 3 eye levels lower than Heroic.
Yeah, but 3 item level doesn't, like, it's not a gap, right? Like you're still gonna, like, you're gonna take the path of least resistance there, right? So I think the idea is there, you're gonna, like, if it's 3 item level is not the difference between killing a boss and not killing a boss for the people where that matters, right? Like, so yeah, I mean, the idea is like, I feel like they might need to elongate that, and then they don't need this sort of tier set system that, the other side of this too, then, is like, I don't think we even talked about was like the set bonuses. We mentioned the set bonus only work in certain areas, but that also means that now you're gonna want like a Mythic Plus gear set that does not come with a set bonus, right? Where you're gonna want to just equip your 5 best gems regardless of set bonuses. So now you're sort of thinking in your head as a, again, sort of a min-maxer, which sort of equates the rest of the community because people sort of follow what people say, right? Right, wrong, or indifferent. The idea is like WoWhead's going to put out a post that says, here's your best 5 gems for Mythic Plus and here's your best 5 gems for raiding. And if you're doing Mythic Plus and you don't have those 5 gems, somebody's going to say something to you, right? Like that's the mentality. So and now you have that extra stress there.
Yeah, and the tediousness of just swapping the gems is going to be worse than conduit energy.
I expect for a lot of people you're going to wear the same 5 gems in raid and Mythic Plus because the gems are unique equipped, so you can only wear, there's like 1 damage gem, 1 healy gem, and 1 tertiary stat gem. And the healy gem and the tertiary gem are like not a big deal. So you're probably gonna wear your 3 damage gems or your 3 potency gems, and then 1 healy and 1 tertiary gem to turn on your set bonus. But when you step into Mythic Plus, like those two basically don't matter. So it's going to be okay that you don't swap them around because you're talking about like 0.25% of tertiary stat or something.
Yeah, I think I looked at them, at least for Prop Paladin, you'll probably drop one. You'll probably drop the weakest gem out of the set bonus you're using, and then you'll pick up like the second strongest gem from another set. So for Mythic Plus. So,
but it's still that, to me, it's still that sort of idea of like, you got to make sure you swap, or like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just another sort of like level of like they put in a system that they're trying to fix a problem with that, you know, maybe exists, right? I guess from the analytics, right? Lincoln, to your point, that does exist, but the way they're trying to fix it just seems like it's off the mark, right? It just comes with a bunch more problems that are just not needed if it was much simpler in terms of its implementation, right?
Yeah, like, I agree with that. I think there's also the element of, they want to make sure, they want to have Mythic Plus kind of be its own gearing path as well, because there are people that don't want to raid. Like, we run into people at doing recruitment for my guild that like are very upfront about the fact that they are just doing raiding in order to get gear for Mythic Plus. And I think that Blizzard wants to make sure that Mythic Plus gearing is not so bad that that's completely nonsense. And, you know, making Mythic Plus and the dungeon drops be 10 eye levels less than Heroic is probably like at that, like, it's the point where, yeah, Heroic gear is clearly better than from a raider perspective. But if you want to just do keys, then that further cements that, like, no, you actually have to raid. And then the reward from raiding is being able to do high keys, which is
right. But then we end up,
people that want to do high keys don't want that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the other side of that is then we end up with this system.
Right.
Right.
Although where, I like, think this system
where it's has... like where it's like close enough that they need to add something to make you want to go on a raid and get raid gear, where it's like,
well, I want to know is like, why did they go with gems? Why gems? Why not just have like the helm slot be like, okay, like let's say for leather, they could just make like the helm slot be blood or, you know, unholy, the shoulder slot be frost, and the chest slot be blood, and then there's, you know, two different or a couple different pieces throughout the raid that's like, here's this other piece that turns on your blood set, and here's right. this other leather piece that turns on your unholy set, and like they're just in the same slot, right? So you can't have both of them. Like, why not do that? Why have this whole extra layer of like, here's gems and upgrades, and you got to extract the gem from the item to upgrade it. And
so one thing to always remember in design is thematics. So this is very thematic with Death, the Shadowlands. Like when
I'm
I
not sure how gems are thematic.
Honestly. Well, you know the thing about the type
blood
of gems.
Only frost.
Yeah, frost. That's the thematic part.
Right.
Like shards is very much like a callback to say Shards of Frostmourne.
Okay.
So I think thematics was a big part of this. And then the other, for me, I think this system kind of, it shows the limits of borrowed power systems that are attached to gear. Because eventually you're going to run into these collisions, like the collision between domination gems, domination sockets, and legendaries. And I think that the collision there is going to cause so much, it's already caused so much consternation in our community, like among the people who are writing guides or, you know, the people that know this stuff. And then you got to think about the person who maybe only got a 210 legendary because they don't need anything higher. And now they're like, why do I need to go back to Torghast to recraft my legendary? Because I got this item off the vendor, right? So I think like even like the shock to them that they have to go back into something that they, in the content that they might not like.
Yeah.
It is probably going to even be more harmful to the game than helpful.
Yeah. I do want to say as well, the changes to Torghast are making it certainly more palatable to me. We're going to see how it actually pans out because later episode, we're not talking about this today because we are running short on time. But you can get socket and conduit items from doing Torghast as well, which is, I think, for me at least, more appealing than doing the rep grind.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think there's obviously not a Torghast episode, but there's other advantages to Torghast, unlimited soul ash farming. There's no weekly cap. So there's there's more incentive, tower knowledge. There's a lot of more incentives to go back and do Torghast repeatedly. So
Yeah, that is true. All right. So I think, I mean, I don't know if there's any other items we want to, I know we had one other thing I think Emerson you wanted to touch on, was just sort of some of the covenant stuff for monks here at the end of the episode here. But is there anything else on shards before we sort of pivot this domination effect set bonus thing?
I actually had one more thing I wanted to mention about it, and I'll mention it briefly. One thing that I think WoW has struggled with for a long time now is making people actually like think about their gear on an ongoing basis and not just be like, oh, I got the item, I equipped the item, I forget about the item, which has happened a lot. BFA was really bad about this with Azerite armor, where you're like, you got your Azerite, you put it on, you forgot about it. For a lot of players. And the domination stuff just reeks of that, because you're going to get your domination piece, it's going to be completely irreplaceable until you get another one that's just higher eye level, and you're just going to forget about it.
We want to address the point in the chat that Powell brought up about armor types, just to make sure that.
Oh, works. Yeah. So there's a current hypothetical cheese going around where you equip gear of another armor type. So for monk, you can equip cloth pieces in order to get two set bonuses. From the wording of the blue post, it seems like this probably should not work. Historically, this is the kind of thing that would totally work for a week and then get hot fixed. Lincoln, I think you had some thoughts on this.
Yeah, so from what I've been told, it is not going to work. So what they've done is they've tied the set bonuses to the armor specialization. So like, you know, if you're a clothy, you equip all cloth, you get intellect, monk, you get to agi, or it depends on your spec. If that bonus is not triggered, then you don't get any of the bonuses from the domination jumps or from the set bonus or something like that. So
that basically means that
if you equip the sixth item, you're just not going to get it.
Not only are you not going to get the second set bonus, you're not going to get the first set bonus right. either.
Yeah, that's how I understand it, but they've put restrictions in place to prevent that edge case. So
it seems this is not something I put in the Brewmaster FAQ for next patch, because it didn't seem like it was something, if it worked on launch, it was something that's going to get broken real quick.
Right.
And sounds like it's probably not going to work at all.
Yeah, and the high end would abuse that. Like they would, they would literally just trade all the gear and just load up all the gear on like on their best players. So yeah. It would be very reminiscent of like the way Azerite trading worked. Like when you would trade Azerite initially, and then you could just disenchant, you know, Azerite outside of your armor class, and you still got the residual. So
yeah,
it would be very similar to that. So I expect, yeah.
That's good. I didn't want to have to wear cloth. Like, what is it? Cloth bracers, right?
I was kind of excited about it because I very much enjoyed wearing like garbage tier bracers that had Twilight Dev on them for the big memes. but I'm also happy that I don't have to fight with the clothies over their domination socket pieces.
Yeah.
One other thing really important to note is that I think there's one BOE for each armor type that's in a domination socket as well. They will not have domination sockets at all. So they can't drop with them, whatever else. So
that's
every version will have, it can probably have a regular socket depending on the slot, but it will never have a domination socket. So
good to know.
So that BOE is basically dead then.
I think for hot, like if you're in the top world first, you're going to still want the BOEs just for item level. But outside of that, BOEs are going to be dead in some of those slots.
Gotcha. Oh man, great job, Blizzrad. Jesus.
Okay, moving on real quick. we've got one more thing I wanted to touch on before we hit questions, and that is an update to like where Monk Covenants stands for patch 9.1. And I'll kick things off with Windwalker because I think the answer is basically the same as it was for 9.0, where Kyrian is still very good because Weapons of Order is very good for Windwalker. And it takes a lot to overcome that. But I think basically the ranking is Kyrian, Necrolord's pretty close, and then Night Fae. The new Night Fae legendary is actually pretty good. And that brings it up for AoE scenarios as well. Brewmaster, I have some mixed messages to deliver to you today. Some people have noticed that the FAQ in Brew Resources no longer lists Night Fae as recommended for raiding. And that is because the single target gap and the two target gap for Night Fae it's fallen behind the other two covenants. So Kyrian and Necrolord pulling ahead. Kyrian kind of bolstered by the existence of Brawn right now, even the not completely busted version on PTR. Is still very good, and it's currently like 200 DPS ahead of Necrolord in Sims, and then like Pelagos and the Necrolord Covenant are like right all together.
I expect Brawn to get dismantled before the patch comes out. Like I think whatever change they made to increase the stack rate, it's still active on the PTR. I think it's going to get nerfed.
So this I'm talking about, so in Sims he still behaves like he does on 9.0. So in the Sims he is still 200 DPS ahead even if they did dismantle the current stack rate. Gets better
with the patch notes in the Sims, so like the reduced stack and the 10% increased damage. Is that in the
Sims? I think it's got the new scaling coefficients but not the new stacking.
Okay. So that's also going to affect the Sim as well. So if he's already ahead by 200, he's going to be ahead even more.
Yeah.
So
currently the recommendation that we have is that if you're raiding, you want to be Necrolord or Kyrian. If you are not raiding, Night Fae does actually very, very well on AoE. With the only Covenant legendary that's worth looking at for Brewmaster is the Feyline Harmony legendary. The others are not worth your time. And that one, though, very good on AoE. So that actually means that like if you're Night Fae, so for one thing, if you're Night Fae and you're not like pushing high end raiding, like doesn't like stay Night Fae. It's not that far behind. We're talking it is in pure single target in the absolute worst case scenario, about 8 to 10% behind Kyrian with Brawn, which is a lot. Don't get me wrong, it is a lot, but that is also assuming that you're playing Kyrian with Shard Passions, optimally using Weapons of Order, getting good value out of Invoke Niazhao. Like, there's a lot of assumptions that go into that. So I would not really stress about it if you're not doing, like, high-end cutting-edge raiding.
Gotcha. And then, I guess for for Mistweaver, not much really changes. I think Kieran, like, not I think Kieran and Necro are going to be probably your top two picks. You know, Night Fae loses out slightly. Venthyr still, you know,
Venthyr is still a giant
name. Yeah.
But Venthyr is like 20% behind Kieran right now for Brewmaster. Do not play it.
Yeah, so I mean, I think the only interesting thing coming from Mistweaver right now is with some of the changes. I know we didn't really talk about class changes here, but some of the changes are increasing the value of mastery for us, namely Revival now utilizing mastery on its heal, and then they made some changes to some of our conduits and in our interaction with Invoke GG, our 45 talent. I think that's the level it's on. So there are mastery is kind of coming up in value, so potentially some interesting discussions and thoughts around like the use of like Kieran and the new legendary Call to Arms, you know, which procs a Celestial whenever you use Weapons of Order, and with fight timings, you know, potentially very good, like leveraging that into Mechanicos also with the fact that he has the cooldown reduction on Weapons of Order depending on adds hit. Again, thinking towards Sylvanas in phase two, there are some potentially like interesting builds or changes in terms of what you're going to target, but I think in general, the idea is that, you know, Necrolord and Kieran are still going to be your top two covenants for Mistweaver. If you do any sort of multi-specking, like you'd want to go Kieran, right? Just because it's better for, you know, Windwalker, Brewmaster. But yeah, I mean, those are going to be your top two with, you know, Night Fae, you know, behind. And then sort of Venthyr. I mean, the problem is like Venthyr could be good, but no one plays it. So like it...
I can say confidently, Venthyr is not good for Brewmaster. There is one redeeming factor of Venthyr, and it is Draven. Everything else about the Covenant is bad.
Yeah. But ask Mr. Robot says it's best, though.
Ask Mr. Robot says Draven is very good, which we already knew.
Oh, that was good. Venthyr. The funny thing is like the Venthyr legendary seems pretty interesting, like the cooldown reduction on it. But like, again, as a healer, like at least I'm speaking specifically from a healer perspective, like the random nature of those clones, like sometimes they just channel Soothing Mist for 8 seconds on a target that was at 90% absolutely wasted, right? If they don't cast like Enveloping Mist like they should. So yeah, I think the ability itself has like the potential to be very good, but it's one of those things where like if you don't hit the right targets, if it doesn't cast the right things at the right time, it's just like ultra lackluster, which random procs are just never something a healer wants. So yeah,
it's
even
bad on average. Like if you're just looking at the damage component of it, it's just bad on average. I think they really missed an opportunity with, if they're going to have the Covenant Legendaries be good, they missed an opportunity to use the Venthyr Covenant Legendary to make Venthyr compelling for Brewmaster and Windwalker. Yeah. As it stands, the Venthyr Covenant Legendary is actually like 150 DPS worse than both Brewmaster legendaries.
Jesus.
So,
I feel like that CDR thing that's on the legendary should be baseline. Like that should be part of the ability itself. And I feel like that would be a much better ability. And it's very sad. Venthyr has the best transmog for leather.
Yeah. Disagree.
So that's just my, but, obviously, yeah. personal opinion.
That is one of the nice things about the covenants, yeah. Right? Is we're supposed to be able to pick like our tier set, the set that we want and stuff like that. And then we're all pigeonholed into playing Kieran. And,
right. And I think the Kieran thing a lot is, especially for multi-spec, especially if you PvP, like you're going to want to PvP as Windwalker, Kieran, that's going to be your best bet. So
yeah, and that's where I actually switched from Night Fae to Kieran. I mentioned this on the podcast before. I did it for Windwalker PvP, not for Brewmaster. And if I hadn't switched for PvP as a Windwalker back in January, I would have been Night Fae probably until now, and I probably would have switched to Necrolord at this point because I just don't like Kieran. But since I'm already Kieran, I don't feel the need to like switch.
Yeah, I wanted to go. Yeah, my monk is just an alt, so I just wanted to go Necrolord. I wanted to go Necrolord on it originally because I really just like the Necrolord ability for, and I think it's actually just really fun to play with, especially in dungeons, which is most of the content that I do on my monk.
Right.
But because I needed to gear a little bit at PvP, I had to go Kieran. And it kind of boxed me in. So I was forcing the Kieran on the monk. And it is what it is, but it's kind of a shit situation.
Yeah. So, summary, covenants for monk are kind of similar to where they were in 9.0. I think a lot of brewmasters right now are Kieran and are going to stay Kieran. If Braun gets gutted, then we're probably going Necrolord, but it's going to be pretty close and you're not losing a whole lot to Distaste Tyrion. Night Fae, probably one of the best options for like mid-level keys, which aren't dominated by like how long can the tank survive, you know, because the Feyline Stomp just does actually lots of work, lots and lots of work in that kind of like 15 key range.
Cool. All right. Any other final pieces as we come up to the end here? Got one more section to get through. All righty. So we're going to skip our lore corner this week. We've, of course, ran out of time. We'd link it on to talk about Sanctum Domination sockets and gems and all that fun stuff. So we'll get back to the lore corner. I'm actually excited because we're gonna talk about some interesting
stuff. I have
stuff.
A secret to tell you all. He didn't actually put anything on the lore corner section this week.
It says skip this week. It says skip this week. Also, I didn't really do anything because I was busy writing 700 articles and rewriting them at the same time as they made changes this week. So, but we are going to hit Q&A. As always, you guys can send in your questions. We will answer them. I actually didn't ask for questions this week. So if you have any
questions, let us know. Which is where one of ours came from.
Oh, nice, nice. So we only have about two questions on the list this week, but we'll get into them. First question comes from me because I thought it would be interesting to ask this question is, and it's to both of you, of course, when you make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, what do you put on first, the peanut butter or the jelly?
Peanut butter.
The peanut butter.
Whatever I grab first.
That's also a good answer.
Yeah. So I'm going to tell you the correct answer is peanut butter. You want to know why? Because if you ever get jelly inside of your peanut butter, like you use the same knife, you do the jelly first, you get it on there, and then you go right into the peanut butter. It makes the peanut butter crunchy and weird next time you go in there. So as an aside, always peanut butter first.
I usually wipe the knife off because I've learned that lesson. So.
Oh, see, I'm lazy. I guess it's poor form if I like licked it first and then put it in there.
Yeah, it is.
But yeah, no, okay, fair enough. What you're very much you're ready for it. Okay, clean the knife off. I'll learn that. I'll grab like a paper towel.
Yeah, that's what I do. Just grab a paper towel.
That works. Okay, so that was my one question. I thought that was interesting. Also, I had peanut butter and jelly for lunch today. Because I'm 12. So the next question comes from Veggie Man. Just Veggie Man. Is that really the person's name?
Yeah, it's Vegetable Man in Brew Lounge. Yes, it is.
Oh, well, please, proper names. Vegetable Man asks, Dratno said brew bad. Should we delete characters now?
No. I have no context for this. I have no idea what Dratno said and if he was joking.
You might be talking about the tier list. So Dratno put out multiple tier lists this week.
Yeah.
But
I saw like a large number of tier list memes this week. I don't know if Dratnus's list was a meme or if it was like a Mythic Plus list or anything about it.
It was real.
But like Brewmaster is going to be fine for raid. It probably isn't going to be the best tank on any axis. Like it's not going to be the best defensively. It's not going to be the best damage, but it's perfectly competent in both directions and brings an important raid buff. So if you're raiding, like Brewmaster is still a pretty solid choice. For Mythic Plus, I have no goddamn clue. My impression is that everybody is just a bear now, and it's just bears. No idea.
Bears everywhere. Yeah, the biggest thing is for Monk is that they only have the debuff. Like the debuff is literally the only thing that they have.
They've
like,
really lost. They use.
Yeah, if you think back to like old year, like Ring of Peace was really good. The stun was really good. So like none of those tools are flexible in this raid.
Yeah.
So like you.
There's also Brewmaster used to have this niche where it was just extremely good with low gear. Like you could just like not put gear on your Brewmaster and they would be perfectly fine. With how hard stagger percentage scales with agility now, that's no longer the case. Brewmaster actually requires a decent bit of gear to feel tanky. So that's something that is no longer a strength of Brewmaster. Like stagger is still there, but starting out a tier with like 60% stagger and getting up to 70% by the end of the tier does not it doesn't feel like you're very tanky, and in fact you are very vulnerable early in the tier until you get some gear on you,
and you still require insane amounts of external healing like compared to another tank who
I wouldn't say insane
it's a little bit higher. I mean,
yeah, if you use Celestial Brew well, then it can be pretty low. but it's never going to be as low as a prop paladin
or a blood decay.
Yeah.
There's other tanks with a little bit more self sustain.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, that was, I guess, came from a tier list. It's funny, the tier list memes are really good. Like you said, the speed, I think somebody mentioned in chat, the speed run tier lists are funny. So look up those. The best one, though, was the color tier list, where it was like purple and had like all the class basically based on color in like the tier list format. So that was pretty funny. I saw that one like too. But
if you haven't seen the tier list images, there's like S tier is red, A tier is orange, B is like slightly more yellow, C is very yellow, and D is green. So they just went through and like all the green classes are on D, and the two red specs are in, meaning Blood Decay and Assassination Rogue are S tier because they're red. It's great.
Yeah, there's some good memes out there. But yeah, tier lists are always fun. I hate them, but people like to watch that stuff. So
it's just like listicles from 10 years ago. People fucking love them. They say they hate them, but they read them.
Yeah, read them, watch them.
What are you talking about? We have to turn in a WoWhead tier list this Thursday. What are you talking about?
The raid one is, right?
And the raid one is. Yeah, week after that for Mythic Plus.
Yeah.
And yeah, like I said, I don't think Brewmaster is going to be the best on any axis, but tank balancing raid is actually pretty good. I think you can play pretty much anything. The only thing I personally would be wary of, and I hate to say this with Lincoln on the show, I would be personally wary of doing Mythic progression on a Protection Paladin only because of how punishing it can be. It's kind of like Protection Warrior last expansion, where like you dropped shield blocking, you just died. Like if you have a gap in your CDs at the wrong time, you can pretty easily just die on a Protection Paladin. But other than that, I think they're fine, and they do disgusting damage, so there is upside.
So in terms of like, they're the best against consistent damage. Like if consistent, like they have very high passive DR, high passive armor. So like for damage fights that match that damage profile. Like, they were really bad on Sire because of the constant movement.
Yeah, the constant movement and Sire
every 2 seconds. Yeah, the random teleports that, like, basically, like, negate the block. So, like, they were really bad on Sire. Yeah,
but also, a couple of things, like, we had the 10% damage reduction that applies to all tanks now. That actually, I think, helped, low gear Brewmaster, and also just helped prop Paladin out a lot.
And Blood Decay. Blood Decay was huge for that. So,
yeah.
It helped Paladin a lot because of the Consecration issue, because Consecration is worth 15 to 20% DR at any given time. And that's like almost three times what it was worth in BFA. So,
It's like having Iron Bark up all the time.
All the time. And a lot of people actually don't realize that when they like math out, Prop Paladin only has SOTR or whatever else, and then they forget like 15% Consecration DR, which if it's up all the time is pretty strong. So,
but we are running a little bit over time now, and I know Anom needs to hit the road.
Whatever. It's just my children. They're waking up. They're fine. Crying in their beds. We'll be good.
But I think that is where we will end today's show. I'm getting lots of pings right now, so I gotta go figure out what those are about in a little bit. But thank you all for listening and or watching. Hi, Twitch chat. We will be here next week, same time, same place at 1:30 p.m. Eastern time over on Emelson's Twitch channel. I think next week we're going to be talking about the new patch content. After having actually played a bunch of it on live, as opposed to the partially broken PTR versions, and see what we think, and then talking a little bit about predictions for the world first race, which will start the following Tuesday.
Can't wait! I'm so excited. I love that. I love that.
Let's go pieces.
Yeah, if they would raid longer, they would be like they'd be the best guild. Or no, that's Fat Shark. Yeah,
that's Fat Shark.
Whatever. All those EUs are the same. Whatever. America's gonna win this one.
Okay. But we are gonna wrap it up here. Thank you all for watching and/or listening. I hope you enjoyed the show. And if you did enjoy the show and want to support it and the other work that we do over at the Peak of Serenity, like guides and FAQs and answering questions in brew questions and stuff like that, you can do that over at our Patreon. At patreon.com/peakofserenity. And of course, if you aren't able to or don't want to contribute financially, you can also come and hang out in the lounge channels, which we always appreciate, and help answer questions in the various questions channels. That is always appreciated. But thank you all for listening, and we will see you next week.